To welcome our speaker tonight, Karen from Shikshini, Pennsylvania. Hi, everybody. My name is Karen, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
Thank you so much for having me down here. This is awesome. Do you know where Shikshini is? One person did. You've heard of it? Will you tell me if I'm not doing well with this?
You're perfect.
I'm perfect. I shall be coming back. yeah, it's a little tiny town. Actually, we just moved there. I did live in Kingston for the last 15 years, and we're blessed enough to move down to a little lake, and I got a little house on a little lake, and things are not bad today, you know? Things are not bad. I saw that there are a few new people in the room. Welcome. I could tell you I love Alcoholics Anonymous, but I could also tell you that the first time I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous, you couldn't have told me that I would ever say I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I really had no idea what you people did here, but alcohol had really beaten me, and pretty much this was the last house on the block for me. It's funny, I just had a text from a girl, and I was just talking about her. I took her through the steps about 5 years ago, I guess, and, fell off and went away, and you know how it goes. And so she resurfaced in very bad shape, and she's drinking and trying to stop, and I said, well, you might want to get yourself out to some meetings, you know, and she said, well, that's maybe a good idea. Maybe. But she said to me, I just brought all my AA stuff down and I'm working on my fourth step. And I said, excellent. We'll probably have to do it again, though, after you stop drinking. She said, really? Yeah, that's how I came into it. I didn't know a heck of a lot, that's for sure. But alcoholism, you know, I'm alcoholic. I'm alcoholic. I started drinking real young. And once I found that effect, whew, it was good. And you didn't even have to be with me to drink. I'd drink alone right from the gate. Now, it was just that good. And so I drank and I drank and I drank and I drank a lot. And I got married. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our illness. I'm not selfish. Guys, you might be, but not me. I'm a very nice person, you know. Long time later, I found out I wasn't such that nice person I thought I was. Got married when I was 20. I feel like I was Bill Wilson, you know, only I'm the female version. My husband's a normie, you know, so we kind of switch roles there. But we roared off in the little orange Ford Fiesta, you know, headed for Florida, where grass is greener and beaches are better, you know. And here we come, and it's going to be paradise, and we're drinking, and we're having a great time, and booze is fun. Mm-hmm. And then get to be about age 27, and guys, on page 32 of the big book, they talk about this guy. They don't even give him a name. I wish they did. Anyway, it said that he saw that he could not get anywhere at all in business, and he wanted very much to be successful if he so much as took a drink. So he put the plug in the jug. You know why he did that? And how he did that? I know. Because he hadn't passed that invisible line where he needed the aid of spirituality in order to stop drinking. It didn't mean he was not alcoholic. It meant he stopped drinking. And he went on through business, and you know what? They don't talk about him, but I bet if they talked about him, they would tell you he was a workaholic, he was a maniac, and he was horrible to get along with. Because that man was an untreated alcoholic until he retired, when he picked up a bottle of booze got out his carpet slippers, and was dead within 4 years. Age 27, I put the plug in the jug. I had not passed the invisible line. I had a good enough reason to stop. I wanted to start a family. I never wanted my children to see their mother drunk. I knew I had a problem. But, you know, you're not an alcoholic if you don't drink. You ask my husband what it's like to live with an untreated alcoholic, and he will tell you. Because, folks, he lived with an untreated alcoholic for 23 years. Till I picked up a bottle of booze again. And let me tell you what alcoholism looks like when you're not drinking. You put the plug in the jug. You do not do the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous as recommended, suggested. By the way, that's the only suggestion. We suggest you do those. Followed up by a lot of musts. No God. I went to church. Selfishly. I wanted to go to heaven, you know. You got to go to church if you want to go to heaven. I had it all figured out. Thought it was kind of boring, personally, but, you know, got to get to a good spot. 27, so I have my first child. My husband and I are living in Florida. Guys, when we put that plug in the jug and we do not get a God in our life, we will make things into God and not even know we're doing it. My children became my God. I was super mom. But you see, I'm untreated alcoholic, and I don't know how extreme you guys are. I'm nuts. Insane. So I have this child. Now, my husband has never done anything but wonderful things, although I used to think he wasn't so wonderful. As a matter of fact, I thought he was the problem. Till I found out otherwise. But my husband has never done anything that would cause me to feel this way. But, all right, so I'm a math teacher, okay? And my husband's an electrical engineer. Just having said that, you know there's no romance in our house, right? There's a lot of logic, all right? But there's not a lot of romance. But anyway, so, you know, we have this baby, and we bring it home. And I just don't think he's paying enough attention to detail. You know what I'm saying? Like, to really be trusted to watch this baby, you know? Not for extended periods, anyway. Not that I've ever had children before, but I've been a responsible pet owner. And I feel that somehow that translates. He really never had dogs or anything, so, like, what does he know, right? I mean, this all makes sense to me. By the way, I use a lot of alcohol logic. But anyway, well, back in the day, they used to make you stay in the house for 4 weeks after you had the baby. You got good cabin fever, and then you were able to go out. So we packed up that baby. You know how you pack up the house? Now, and here we go. We're going to the grocery store. This is great. So I left my husband in charge of that baby in that, you know, little seat and in the cart. And I went over. My husband's Polish. I only say that because of what I'm about to buy. So I went over to get kielbasa. Out of the case. Now, I left that man with that baby for less than a minute. I turned around. Guys, do you know what I saw? There was a woman. I don't know what she looked like, okay? But she had this long red fingernail. And, man, she was coming after that baby's face. And he's letting her. Can you believe this? So I took that Hillshire kielbasa, and I walked over, and I whacked that woman right on the hand. And I shocked her and my husband, and I shocked myself. And she walked away. I came up with a wonderful thing. I thought we'd have this for dinner. As he's looking. As we're walking away, though, don't you worry. He got it. How could you? How could you let somebody? Okay, the feet, maybe. She was going right for the face. Oh, my God. No wonder I can't have you watch her. Okay, so I'm a school teacher, and so I was off. You know, well, and I already told you what my husband and I do for a living. So we had calculated the due date, which I'm pretty good at. So if anybody wants to, you know, do a little formula if you want to have the baby. So my due date was the last day of school. This was so I didn't have to take any time off work. Okay, I'd be home for the summer, and put the child in the daycare. Anyone have plans? Mm-hmm. Alcoholics? We plan, man. All right, so I'm home in the summertime. Now this happens, okay, a month in. I looked at a daycare center. Oh, sweet Jesus. So my husband, he comes home and he says to me, so, you know, summer is going by here. He said, have you looked at any daycares? And I said, yeah, I did. I looked at one. He goes, and? I said, well, to be honest with you, it was like a mini concentration camp. I said, there were seats, swings, lined up in a row with infants swinging, and some were crying. I said, that's not for my daughter. Oh, no. I quit my job. He said to me, you did what? Now, I don't feel this is selfish whatsoever. All I want to do is be a stay-at-home mom and take care of this child. He should love it. He should want this for me and the child. This will be good. He looked at me and said, well, what are we going to do now? I said, well, what do you mean? I just told you what I'm going to do. I'm going to be a stay-at-home mom. What you're going to do? I don't know. Like maybe get another job? Like, I don't know. I'll stay at home, mom. I am not selfish or self-centered, folks. I want you to know that. I did this out of the goodness of my heart for the love of my child. Mm-hmm. Considerate and courteous of all. That's me. I'm still married to this guy, by the way. I don't know why. So we go on, and I mean, this is untreated alcoholism for me. Yeah, I don't know it, though. I'm not an alcoholic. I don't drink. I oftentimes wish they never put alcohol in the name of that illness, you know? It kind of makes it a little baffling. It's more baffling than it has to be alcoholism. Yeah, it's straight up mental illness insanity. Because I was never a peaceful person, you see. Alcohol kind of, you know, did one of those. But without alcohol, without God, here I come. They ought to make a television show, I figure, about that. You know, like the raw, untreated alcoholic. And here we come. We're going to create chaos in your life. I've seen untreated alcoholics in AA. I feel bad. I know. They're in pain. It's painful. Again, just in case you didn't get this, don't put the plug in the jug without doing the 12 steps as outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Please spare yourself this pain. So anyway, you know, we moved to Jupiter, Florida, because we thought that the children should have a quieter environment than down near Miami. So we moved out to this little farming community. I'm not a farmer, but I pretend well. And so, you know, I'm super mom. I'm doing everything for these children because I'm good. It's just how good I am. I am Girl Scout leader extraordinaire. I mean, my troop's the best. You know, I brought home this old trailer, right? And my husband came home and he said, what is that? I said, well, what it's going to be is a Christmas float. You see, the Girl Scouts are going to be in the little Christmas parade coming down Jupiter Farms Road. He said, what are you going to do? Well, what you're going to do is paint it. He said, wait a minute. I don't see other husbands out here doing these things for Girl Scouts. And these were my words to him. Well, I didn't marry them, now did I? My expectations for you are just a little higher. God bless the man, he painted it. Oh, and I stayed up for 3 days and three nights, and I'm making them reindeer, you know, and I'm slapping them on the side, and oh, here we come down Jupiter Farms Road. Doing it for the kids. Doing it for the kids. That's me. Yeah. I want more girls in my troop. Why do I want more girls in my troop? Because I want my girls to have friends. Why do I want more girls in my troop? Because I want your respect. Look at her. Woo, she's the best. Yeah. Didn't even know it. No idea. I thought I had an anger management problem, and I don't say this proudly. I am perfectly capable of being an old person and having a temper tantrum. My husband will attest to this. So if you don't do what I want you to do, I can get really kind of blinded in anger. I did try to kill him with the pickup truck. He didn't do something I wanted him to do, so I tried to chase him through the yard. He was running in a serpentine fashion. And I could not get him. I have a small anger management issue. Other than that, I'm a good person. Okay. Really. I wanted the yard to be like a park, you know? And I explained this to him, and I said, you know, I want the girls to, like, have this kind of nice growing up. Like, I want green grass, you know? I want an aviary down the backyard. Over there, I'm going to stencil a fence, you know, with ivy, and we're going to get a goat. We're living in a farm, you know, we might as well be farmers. Get some chickens, let them walk around. You know, I like the girls, I could just picture them, you know, skipping through the yard, wearing lace, carrying their basket, seeing the sway of the palms, the birds chirping in the aviary. Go over, pet the goat. He said, I really don't think we need that. Ugh. It is so annoying when you say no to me. Like, I don't know why you can't get in this vision with me. Like, just from the start, so we don't have to argue about this. Okay? Because, all right, quite frankly, I'm going to get it. So this can go down easy, and we'll be a happy family. Or it can go down hard, and we'll repair the damage and be a happy family maybe later. I'm getting an aviary. God love the man. He went out and built me an aviary. I went out to get the bird. I came back with 55. You had to fill it, guys. You know, it would look stupid if you just had one bird in it. You know, so I'm feeding them. I'm raising the birds. You know, lovebirds, cockatiels, nandy parrots. Like, I got them. Oh, we're feeding the birds, feeding the birds. A little lady comes up from Palm Beach. Yeah, here's your bird. I got to tell you something, though. In about a year, do you know my girls never looked at those birds? We got the goat, too. Bottle fed it, even. They could care less. Do you know my husband wouldn't help me? He would not help me clean up after all of it. Do you know how noisy and dirty birds are? You know, no one will cooperate in this family to make it nice. I'm just trying to make it nice. Untreated alcoholism. Yeah, get rid of the birds. Who needs them anyway? After a year. Well, this part of the story I do have to tell you because I'm stone cold sober, okay? But there was one person in my life who I really absolutely adored, and that was my mother. That woman, she could do no wrong. She could watch my children. No one else could, but she could. You know, that person. She was wonderful. I would call her crying, and she would tell me my husband was an idiot, and I was wonderful, and I just loved her. I did. And so in February, I had two daughters. They were 3 years old and 1 year old at the time, and we came up to Pennsylvania, where I'm originally from, so that they could spend the month of February at Mimi and Bobby's and see snow. So we're staying at my mom and dad's, and they see snow, and we're having a great time, and it's the end of February, and I'm packing things up to fly back to Florida with the girls, and my mom comes out and says to me, my back is really killing me. And I said, well, Mom, you've been carrying the baby around. You're not used to that. You know, it's been a whole month. Yeah, she said, I think I'm going to go lay down. She said, I feel like I'm going to throw up, too. I said, yeah, okay, so she went in to lay down, and my dad went in to check on her about 35 minutes later, and she had had a massive heart attack. So he called me to the room, and I went into the room, and when I got to the doorway, you know those things you see that you'll never unsee, and my mom's face was blue, and she wasn't breathing, and I got to tell you that I felt like something was ripped out of me, like a surgeon had removed an actual portion of my body. I checked for a pulse, I checked for breathing, There was none. My dad and I lifted her down onto the floor. I used to be a nurse. I only did that for a year, but that's another story. I began CPR on my mom while my 3-year-old and 1-year-old stood on the bed and watched. And I can remember this like it was yesterday. I did the compressions, 1-1,000, 2-1,000. And I'm looking up the whole time, crying, saying, God, please don't take her from me, 1,000. God, I'm not ready for this, 1,000. You know, years later, I would find out that selfishness and self-centeredness was the root of my problem. My mom is dead, and who am I worried about? How is this going to affect me? Please don't take her from me. Yep. Well, we stayed on up here, and my mom went into ICU. She was on a ventilator. They did have a heartbeat before she left the house. The doctors, 5 different doctors actually came and spoke to me at separate times asking me, you know, what had happened. And I explained to them just what I explained to you. And they said to me, well, this is impossible. She can't be alive after finding her after 35 minutes and to what you're describing, you know, completely cyanotic. And I said, well, I'm not lying to you. You know, this is what happened. They said, it's nearly impossible. I would say to them, look at her. She's on a ventilator. She's unconscious. Like, do you call this life? About 3 days in ICU, she began to assist the ventilator, so she was able to breathe on her own, but she's still unconscious. About a week in, the blood stopped going to my mom's feet. And they called me in and said that they were going to have to amputate both of her legs, but couldn't do it right then because of the massive heart attack. The anesthesia would kill her. So they would have to wait, and they would wait until gangrene set into the legs. And when the fever went through the body, or the infection went through the body, she would spike a fever, and then they would do emergency amputations with the least possible anesthesia. I said, okay. I watched my mom every day. We would go down, and about, I don't know how many weeks in, my dad started to not recognize her and thought he was going to see his mother. And I said, no, Dad, that's my mom. Your mom's been dead for a long time. And he said, oh. He came in at night while the girls and I were sleeping, and around 2 in the morning, and you ever sense someone's there, but they don't do anything, but you sense. And you wake up, and I said, Dad, what's the matter? And he would say to me, there's Indians running in the backyard. I'd say, no, Dad, you're dreaming. Go back to bed. Well, I took him to the psychiatrist, and here he had Alzheimer's. So things are not going well. The doctors are telling me that she's going to die at any point, which at that point would have been a blessing in my mind. Anyway, about 3 months in is when the fever finally hit her. Her feet and her legs were black. The nurses would roll her. She was occasionally conscious, but still in the ICU. And she would just scream out in pain. And it was horrible. They called me to come down to sign for the amputations, which I did. And guys, they amputated her legs with a local anesthetic. She went back to her room after that surgery, and 2 weeks in, both of those incisions were infected because, you see, she was able to scoot around a little bit now, and because she was incontinent of her bowels, she would get the incisions into her own feces, and they were infected. And the doctor said to me, this is all we can do for your mom, so what we're going to do is put a feeding tube in and send her to the nursing home. And I said, no, that's okay. I don't want a feeding tube. And he said, what do you mean? I said, well, she's conscious and she is able to swallow. You know, I've given her some things. She can swallow them. I'll feed her. And I said to him, and I don't really want her to go to a nursing home either. I'll take her home. And he looked at me and he said these words to me. He said, are you crazy? And I had to laugh. I don't know about you guys, but all my life I have known that I thought just a little different than other people. And the reason that I knew that was people would say to me, "What's wrong with you?" Indicating there's something wrong with me. Now, my usual response was, "Nothing. What's wrong with you?" But I said to him, some people have said that to me in the past. But I explained to him that, you know, she had a urinary tract infection from the catheter, the incisions, everything I just told you. She had high blood pressure. Now she had a seizure disorder. She had bed sores starting and, of course, the infected legs. And I said to him, you know, if your fear is she's going to die at home, is there something wrong with that? And he said, no. So I was scared out of my mind, but the ambulance brought her home. And he set up the bed in the room, hospital bed, and they brought my mom in, and she had been in and out of consciousness, but the doctors told us how she wasn't ever going to be able to, you know, speak, or the lack of oxygen to the brain and all that stuff. So she was just going to kind of be laying there. They got her all comfortable in bed, and my 3-year-old ran past me as I stood in the doorway and jumped up on the bed with my mom. And guys, I heard my mom say this, "Katie." That's my 3-year-old's name. She said, "What happened to me?" In full sentence. And my 3-year-old said to her, "Mimi, you were dead." And my mom said, "What do you mean? Where are my legs? Was I in a car accident?" I couldn't tell you what I did right then. I looked up and I said, "I don't know what you are, but you're the man." My mom had no memory of any of those 3.5 months. The things I saw with my own 2 eyes weren't affecting her. That's pretty powerful. And I can tell you at that point that this blanket of peace came over me on the inside. And it was just kind of like when you take that first drink. Like everything's going to be okay. I don't know how. I don't really even care how. But everything's going to be okay. Because you see, I don't have to control anything. There is a power out there that's controlling things far better than anything I could ever come up with. I'll tell you now that my mom did live another 18 and a half years. She lived with us. She learned how to walk on prosthetic legs. And my dad, he passed away 5 years later from the Alzheimer's. I consider this a miracle. People would come into the house while my mom was trying to learn how to walk, and my dad's out chasing Indians, and I got the 3-year-old and 1-year-old doing their deal, you know, and it was pretty chaotic, I gotta tell you, on the outside. But you know what I felt like on the inside? I felt a sense of peace. I found a sense of joy. And quite honestly, guys, it was a pleasure. It was a privilege for me to be able to take care of my parents and my girls. I was doing AA, and I didn't even know it, because that's what we learn here. You see, AA is an altruistic spiritual program of action. Altruism. We learn how to do things for others without any expectation of anything in return. No thank you, no nothing. Just do it. And I'm going to tell you, there's no feeling in the world like doing something for someone who you know can never repay you. No feeling at all. Spiritual, I think we all know what that means. I was rock solid man with God. I knew he had control. I trusted him. I believed in him. I had faith in him. And he was able to work through me because I allowed him to. And action, yeah, I was dog tired. There's a lot of stuff going on. But people would come in that house and they would say, "Oh my God, this is beautiful." Well, you can well imagine what that house looked like. Anything but beautiful. And I would say, "Oh, And they would say, no, don't, it's not the house. It's the feeling. The feeling in this house is beautiful. You could feel the love. So fast forward, guys, because I become really very selfish all over again, and we move back here to Pennsylvania some 23-ish years later, and I pick up a drink, and I can't put it down. I can't put it down. I didn't know I was an alcoholic. No idea. Oh, I got a problem now. Because, you see, I drank for maybe a month, kind of normally, kind of. But then I hit a month, and oh, man, I couldn't stop. And it was blackout drinking, and it was horrible, and it went on for almost 4 years, just like that man on page 32. And I'm a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, as they say. These children who I was super mom to, I am now super not nice to. Because, you know, I say some pretty harsh things. I have a talent when I'm drunk. I know if you're an idiot just by looking at you. And I feel like maybe you should die. And you know what? As long as I'm at it, your family too. They produced you. Now, I may not seem too big because they had to bring the microphone down, but I do have a car and I have a gun, and that should do the job. So I'm not a happy little disco drunk. My family hated me by the end of this almost fourth year. And anyway, the one night, as we become with the illness of alcoholism, we begin to hate everything, everybody, including ourselves. And the best option for me was suicide. And I got that gun. Now, I wasn't going alone, though. I planned on taking out somebody else, too. Well, why leave the world with him in it? Anyway. My girls, they got the gun. They actually kind of wrestled me and got the gun away from me, and they literally took me kicking and screaming into the pickup truck across the cross valley and over to the crisis unit. And at some point, while punching, kicking the truck into neutral and trying to get out of all of this because I did not want to go, thought that they were very disrespectful. Their mother. It's my house. I passed out and woke up in crisis. You guys ever wake up and not kind of know where you are? Yeah, how about that? Mm-hmm. And I kind of got my bearings. I saw this big letter on the wall. I'm on a gurney. And I picked up this big yellow sheet of paper laying on it. And I didn't even need my reading glasses. They were kind enough to write really big. Homicidal and suicidal. And I don't know what happened on that gurney that night. But inside, I said, there is something seriously wrong with you. You need help. And I don't even know what they do with people like me, but they need to do it. And I gave up. I didn't realize that this surrender was such a big deal in AA. That's a big deal. And I went into detox and rehab, and I cried for 17 days. They told me I was leaving. I cried again because I didn't think I was well enough to leave. Thought they were making a terrible mistake with me. But I had gotten a sponsor. Guys, I don't know anything about what you do in AA. Nothing. But I know I don't want to live like I'm living. So I'm ready to listen. And I got this sponsor. I got yelled at for this because my counselor said, do you have a sponsor? I said, yes. What's her name? I said, Chris. Then I made the mistake of saying, and he's going to meet up with me as soon as I leave. And she yelled. And I said, okay, I'm sorry. What did I do wrong? She said, you're not allowed to have a man. I said, why? Is that my problem? Men are my problem? I kind of thought they were. You know, so if you say they are, All right, I'm not telling you what to do, and this is not a suggestion. I kept him. I used him completely for his big book. I met up with him as soon as I walked out of the rehab unit, and man, this guy explained to me what the illness of alcoholism was. He told me about the mental obsession. He told me about the physical allergy. Oh yeah, that explained a lot to me because I didn't know any of that. You know, those times when you're trying to quit because you know how stupid you are and how ridiculous this is and how you're hurting not only the people around you but yourself and you're killing yourself, and then 5 minutes later, I think I should have a drink. Yeah. You know, because, well, yeah, okay, so last night, but come on. Don't make a big deal. Mental obsession. Yeah. A mind that once is dead, I think. The physical allergy, that made a whole lot of sense. That made a whole ton of sense. That's when, you know, I think you're a lightweight. Because you want to go to bed or something. Like, I don't want to go to bed. Let's go. More. Then he explained to me that we also suffer from this thing called a spiritual malady, a spiritual sickness. And I was like, mm-hmm. Now, all this is new to me, guys, because I think I'm coming to AA because I drink too much. He's on a whole different topic. I'm like, what is this all about? This is interesting. So he took me through step one. It got me to admit that I was powerless. That was not really a big deal to me. I knew I did not come in here almost an alcoholic, okay? I knew there was a big problem. I'm the real deal. Powerless, I know if I don't do something, from my experience, if I do not go through these steps, I'm going to drink again. I get it. I can't stop myself. I've tried. Have you? Life unmanageable? Yes, it is, because you see that when I try to stop drinking, this is how I am. Mom, you're doing really well. You're sober today. I know. Do you want to go out? No. Boring. Wait a minute. Are you having a drink? Don't you drink if I can't drink. I'm sober. Oh, God, it's awful. Like, how long do I have to be sober? Like, all day? Like, in the morning? In the afternoon? At night? Like, this is a lot. All right. I need that little problem taken care of, you know? Sobriety. Ugh. Nobody helps me clean the house. They're all idiots. I just need a drink. That'll take care of things. Boom. Drinking is my solution. So I got that part. He got me to step two. This is how he put step two for me. He said, do you believe that there's something out there greater than you that made all of this? I thought that was a very odd way of beating around the bush to ask me if I believed in God. I had no idea that in AA, some people kind of bristle with antagonism when hearing the word God. I didn't. That wasn't me, okay? I'm okay with God. I said, are you asking me if I believe in God? He said, well, yes. I said, well, yes, I do. But then he said this magical question. He said, do you believe that God has enough power to save your ass? Sorry, from this illness. That kind of stopped me dead in my tracks. That story I just told you about my mother came flooding back into my head right at that moment, sitting in Curry Donut, which I fondly call Recovery Donut. And in my head, I pictured my mom on the bed and my daughter on the bed, and I heard her say, Katie. What happened? You were dead. What happened to my legs? Was I in a car accident? That blanket of peace that came over me, standing in that doorway, once again came over me. I didn't know how I was going to be okay, but I knew I was going to be okay. I knew it. I knew I had to do some stuff, but I also knew you guys had an answer for me. God bless everybody in AA, man. I know my sponsor did not get me sober. I know it was God. But wow. Do we have some of God's soldiers right here? It's beautiful. I did go through my steps. We went through step 3. Right there, God, I offer myself to thee. Guys, think about offering. Think about offering anything. I offer you a glass of water. Here you go. Have some water. Now, I might think you're going to drink that water, but you know what? When you get that water is yours. And you start to wash your face with it. I think that's a little strange. But it's your water. Guys, I'm that glass of water. God, I offer myself to thee. To build with me and do with me as thou wilt. Build with me and do with me. Not involved anymore, guys. I'm not involved. God, I'm yours. Please. Because what I built wasn't so good. God, I offer myself to thee to do with me and to build with me and to do with me as I will. Relieve me of the bondage of self. Bondage of self. Yeah, I did this, folks. I built the prison cell myself, got it nice and in place, got in it. Only room for me, thanks. No, Sally. I turned the key, lock her up, and I throw it away. And I cannot get out of my own prison that I built. And, oh, man, it's getting dark in there. It's getting real dark, like I want to kill myself dark. That's pretty spiritually sick, by the way. Well, relieve me of the bondage of self so I might better do your will, God. Not my will, your will. Do you see what I want in this life? Forget it. Just forget it. And if your experience doesn't show you that, wait a little while. Because my experience shows me anytime I want something, oh, it's not going to turn out quite like I had planned. Take away my difficulties. What are my difficulties? At step 3? I don't even know. My difficulties, guys, are all my character defects that I don't even know I have, that I don't even know I operate on a daily basis, but I'm about to find out in step 4. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help. So I want to show the people around me, those people who I will help, God's power, God's love, God's way of life. So I'm actually telling God, I'm going to demonstrate who you are, God. And I'm going to demonstrate unconditional love to the people I come in contact with. I'm going to be kind. I'm going to be tolerant. I'm going to be patient. You know all those little ingredients that make up love? Now, I'm not going to envy what people have. Because, you see, if I have unconditional love for you, I would rather if you have it. Than me. So I do that all in step 3 and I quickly go into step 4 and I have my steps done in about a month. I didn't know what I was doing. I'll be completely honest with you. I didn't understand how all this was working. But I can tell you one thing. 2 weeks out of rehab after an attempted suicide, I'm not even thinking about drinking. Not even thinking about it. The craziest part is, I didn't even realize I wasn't thinking about not thinking about drinking. I had no idea until one afternoon I thought, I haven't been thinking about drinking. And then I said, oh, bad word. Now you've ruined it. Now you've thought of drinking. Then I said, oh, you're an idiot. Guys, the mental obsession, God removes it. He doesn't help us fix it. I don't fix it. He removes it. Like, gone. Bye-bye. Life today, guys, since I have done those 12 steps, since I've had that spiritual awakening, let me tell you what. The journey is amazing. It's amazing. The love in this fellowship is amazing. The ability for those 12 steps to get us into this relationship with God and then hang on to it on a daily basis through steps 10, 11, and 12, daily, just like you take a shower, you know, every day. I hope. Daily. Land us in this same planet, loving everything about it. How? How does nothing change? And yet I wanted to die back then. And today I want to live. Not only do I want to live, I want to love. AA taught me that. Do you understand why I love AA? It's a wonderful, wonderful program. So they say, some people think that we shouldn't, you know, be around alcohol or get ourselves around these people, you know, who are still light drinking. You know. Doesn't tell us that in the big book. It says get out there on the firing lines. God will protect us. Let him protect you. And go ahead and demonstrate. Sponsorship, biggest privilege in the world in this. You want to see miracles before your eyes every day? Wow. Things that you seem, that seem at the moment impossible. No way to get over this one. God comes up with this crazy way of getting over it. I think God might be an alcoholic, but I'm not sure. So my favorite trip was twice a year we would go to Seneca Lake on the wine trip. You know, that day when everyone could get drunk and not just pick on me. So I still go on that wine trip, guys, with my family. They are normies. And so I'm the designated driver now. I am not suggesting you do this if you're new or your obsession has not been removed or you do not have a good enough reason to be there. But for me, it's beautiful. I can actually be with my family. I stand next to my youngest daughter now. She hated me, man. She likes me again. So does my husband. Actually, yeah, that happened about 2 months ago, I think. But he likes me again. But anyway, she gets that little wine glass, you know, and they only fill it like this big. Yeah, that much. Pathetic. And then she swirls it. She, you know, looks at it. She sniffs it. She hands it to me. And I look at it, swirl it, sniff it. I hand it back to her. I say, well, this one you ought to be able to detect for some florals. And I think this has a satin finish. Now, I'm going to tell you guys, I don't have a clue. I never tasted a flower in my wine ever. And I'll tell you, I do like the taste of wine. Like, don't get me wrong. But if I were to tell you I drink because I like the taste, well, that'd be a flat-out lie. Because after, you know, 3, 5, 12, I don't taste anything anymore. And, you know, yeah, I like the taste. I like the taste of ice-cold Diet Pepsi, but I can't tell you the last time I sat down and drank me a case. But that, but She gets in the truck, and I'm driving to the next winery, which she says, "Mom, you're taking me like an alcoholic." I'm like, "Well, there's another one. You have to go." And she looks at me, and she says, "You know, it's too bad you can't have a glass of wine with me." And I said to her, "Why?" She goes, "I don't know. Maybe we could talk about how it tastes." And I said to her, "Oh, honey, I've drank enough wine to kill three elephants. I could tell you how it tastes till the day I die." But it doesn't do the same thing in my body that it's doing in yours. And as I'm saying that, I look over and there she is against the window. Normie. Not me, baby. Give me like 5 glasses of wine and I'm fancy feet. Let's go. Yeah. Allergic reaction, man. You know, I don't react the same. We moved, God has a sense of humor too, and I'll just end with this. So we moved down to Shikshini and bought a house on Seneca Drive. So, love it. If you have not done the 12 steps, I strongly encourage you to do them. Guys, you don't want to miss out on this. A lot of times, and it says this in the big book, the newcomer will say, "Have you a sufficient substitute, you know, for the drugs and the alcohol?" Well, I can honestly tell you, drugs and alcohol are not a sufficient substitute for God. I mean that from the bottom of my heart. Please believe me. Try this. You will love it. Even if you don't think so today. I love you guys. Thank you so much for having me.